Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of a program, Dare to Be Different. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in with us via the audio streaming medium wave 1548 Satellite Islam, and to those of you on DSTV 826. And stepping into the studios this morning, you can see definitely winter's not very far off. The chill has already come in, and Muhammad is smiling, but definitely no sunshine this morning. And whilst we're going from one season to another, transition here in South Africa is very, very short. It's a very short period before we get into winter. And normally when we talk about autumn, we talk a very, very, very short period. But it's an incredible time when we see leaves dropping and we see color, trees turning to different colors. And for many of us, brings lots of memories, especially when we were a child and living near trees where we were going crunch, crunch, into playing into the leaves. And it was just a fantastic experience. Many others, we saw this before it becomes stark and bare, and we find that that is a different beauty altogether. This morning we've got a wonderful guest, and someone who's been no stranger, has been talking to us on a number of occasions, helped us along, shared some wonderful and brilliant ideas, and that's Kerry Goodwin. Now, Kerry comes from a family of horticulturists, very enthusiastic in the, in what they do, and she runs one of the most beautiful garden centers, newly established just outside Midrand, and a wonderful place to be in if you're wanting to see something and wanting to see how we could work together with nature. Beautiful place to go and going for a drive and be inspired. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Good morning, Ismail. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And like I was saying, we're getting into a season which is a very short-lived one here in South Africa. We don't have a long period of autumn. But it is something that if you grew up in an environment with lots of trees, I think, remember, just running through those leaves, going crunch, crunch, I think this is a fantastic experience. I remember that very much, and not to sure if other people share the same experiences. But when you go in and see the trees, turning from green into these beautiful burnt orange and brown before it becomes bare. So it's very much a seasonal but very short-lived. Tell us something of your experiences of autumn.
I was going to say, I love the autumn season because it just becomes a bit cooler, not as hot as when we have it in the summer. And it's a real nice time to get into your garden. You know, I'm very excited because a lot of people have started, I want to say, winter or spring planting again. So you get, people used to leave their gardens and just pretend that they didn't exist in winter. And now people have changed their ideas and they want a good garden all year round. And there's just so many beautiful plants that you can put into your garden in the autumn so that they flower through the winter, give you beautiful color. And it's still very colorful itself, as you were saying, with the changing of the leaves. You know, it's a wonderful time to start making compost. If you don't have a compost heap, use all those leaves that you're going to be crushing and running and jumping into, because that's what we used to do. We used to have mounds of leaves under our trees, and then we used to go and jump on them and then have to rake them up again. But it was just, to me, it's a fun time to be in the garden. And because our soil is dropping slowly, slowly, the roots of some of our plants are not growing as actively. So it's a real time to start digging, and you can make changes. And when the leaves become, the trees become bare, then you get to see what we would call the bones of your garden. So I think, as you said, it's a wonderful time for change. And even though it is short-lived, I think we need to make the most of it.
Thank you very much. I think you've raised some important points around that one, and I'm going to go through some of them. One of the things is that, normally when you came to this, people laid back and said, well, fine, I think we've had enough gardening, we're not going to do anything, and wait until August, September. But I think there definitely is a shift in a trend where people want to see a colorful garden throughout the year, and winter is no exception. Now, having said that, We are spoiled for choices, isn't there? There's a number of both indigenous and endemic plants that we could get the beauty out of in the, during the autumn and winter period. Is that correct?
Yeah. So one of the favorite things in the going autumn now, and, they've been bred now specifically for gardens, and you ideally don't want, is the aloes. Because a lot of people still want, the aloes that you used to find on the mountains and in big, the tree aloes, aloe melates, and the aloe barberes, and they are beautiful, but now you've got specific ones that are bred for our garden, and they'll be like aloe sunrise, and it's been flowering for the last month, and it's going to probably keep flowering for at least another 2 to 3 months. And so it's a very nice water-wise, hardy, but all the aloes are really going to come into fantastic bloom now in the autumn-winter period, and then you should be sowing your Namaqualand daisy seeds, It's also indigenous, and they're going to give you that wonderful yellow and orange, you know, late July spring flowering, just mass, and they can grow anywhere. So as you're saying, you know, the Leonosis leonora, the wild dacha, is also looking incredible at the moment. The Tacoma, which comes in the salmon, the yellow, the orange, and even the red one. So I think it's, you know, nature's amazing as how it provides food sources for the animals that, or birds that need it at the time. So a lot of your plants are flowering beautifully now, and they're going to keep flowering at least up until for the next 6 weeks to provide nectar for the birds that might be going on long journeys, for the insects that might be going into hibernation. So I think it's really a beautiful time to go and enjoy your garden. And then we're not even talking about the little annuals that you should be starting to plant and, you know, trenching for planting your sweet peas. And then obviously your pansies, which I love the best, your calendulas. There's just so much that you could be doing in the garden at this time.
You know, speaking about the beauty and nature providing for all of this, and we see a beautiful and spectacular, I was taking a drive last week out towards, just out of Gauteng, and we saw the spheres of cosmos, and I thought it was brilliant, you know, when you got in there, and you felt like just running into all those fields and saying, you know, just let's just go and get part, be part of that. But it was just magnificent. Yeah.
I think it is beautiful, the cosmos. My dad even said to me, he drove up to Nelspruit last week, and he just said, on the sides of the road there, you just have these verges filled with this beautiful pink and white and purple. And I mean, you don't even find many of the purple ones anymore. So again, it's even those are the things that we haven't planted ourselves, and they're just abundant and joyous. I don't know, I always get a wonderful sense of warmth when I see all this color. Even on the side of our road, we have wild zinnias and that sort of thing. It's crazy, actually.
You know, so when we talk about color, you're not really, you're spoiled really, when we in South Africa, we're really spoiled for color, because when it comes to winter, you can liven up any drab and, you know, dark, you know, spot that you have in the garden. You don't have to plant masses of, you know, or lots of color. You could buy a couple of pots and just put that in, and that would make such a colorful and also a talking point and lift anybody's spirits when they come into the garden.
I think so. And when you say to plant it in pots, you know, it's becoming very, people's garden spaces are getting smaller, and so they're trying to make use of what they've got. And even vegetables now are becoming very trendy to plant in pots. So you would have your cabbage growing in a pot instead of in a vegetable garden. And you know, your spinach is looking always really good, and especially if you choose the bright light ones with the orange and yellow and red stems. So I think, you know, you can put anything in a pot. The aloes look lovely in pots. To have some, what we're thinking of as even bulbs, you know, to be able to, I think what you should be planning in your garden at this time is your transition from your autumn to your winter and then your spring flowering. So now within the next month or so, as soon as the soil temperature is dropping like it is today, it's a wonderful time to start thinking of bulbs that you could plant. You know, maybe you want to put in some ranunculus, or you want to put in some indigenous fragrant freesias, you know, all the daffodils. I know at the one garden center that they want to do in one of our lawn patches is they want to go and plant daffodils in amongst the lawn. And then when spring comes, we're going to have these beautiful yellow flowering daffodils in amongst our lawn. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, you know, I saw some daffodils already on sale, and they look just, you know, stunning when you looked at them. And again, you can be so creative with all of these plants. There's so many things that you could do, and, you know, ways that you could sort of, you know, change the appearance of your garden. I think this is an ideal time. If you find that you're wanting to do something and you wanting to plan, this is the right time. Go out there, take a pen, take a book, and, you know, sketch and say, look, this is what I think I want to do. This is how I could. And then when you go to a garden center, and I'm sure they'll give you the advice and say, you're on the right track.
Yes. So I think any garden center that you go to would definitely be able to help you. And you're 100% correct. It is the time to really take stock of what's going on in your garden and see where you can put other things. When you mentioned earlier, you know, planting color in the shade, it's also a lovely time to put azaleas or rhododendrons and camellias. You know, they're going to start flowering later on in the season. And so you want to feed them well now or plant them in your garden so you have this little bit of pop of color that would have been maybe in a darker space, and just create light within the spaces that we have.
Just talking about azaleas and camellias and so forth, whilst, you know, traditionally we still have them in monocolors or just one particular color of that particular, now we find that we're spoiled because you find that you have them in different colors, and they're just coming, some of them screaming out and say, look at me, look at me, look how beautiful I look, is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, now they come in all, I almost want to say like terracottas and reds and pinks and bicolors and white. And then one of the strongest ones is always the magenta. So that like magenta purple color just seems to do exceptionally well. But the thing with both your azaleas and then your camellias is it would be a good idea to give your food now to, and you should be almost feeding your whole garden within the next 2 or 3 weeks to prepare it for the winter season to, you know, strengthen the roots when it's going to get cold so they don't get damaged if there is any frost. And then, but also to water consistently rather than constantly so that the flowers can actually form beautiful buds and then those buds open. Because we still get lots of customers who will say, oh, my camellias formed a beautiful bud and then it went brown and dropped off. And it was because they just were watering on a Monday and then a Wednesday and then a following Wednesday and the poor tree or plant didn't know if it was Anna or Martha. It was just thinking, what's going to happen to me? And so then it doesn't want to spend all that energy producing a beautiful flower. Whereas if it knows it's going to get 5 liters of water every Monday, then it's going to produce a beautiful, beautiful blossom for you, and that's what you're looking for.
And, you know, just to remind our listeners, of course, you know, the acidity of the soil is important, especially when you talk about the azaleas and the camellias. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. So you should be sharing your coffee granules with the plants if you want, or buying acid compost, you know, putting mulch down because a lot of our mulch is pine-based, so that's also going to help with the acid. So there is a lot of things that you can do to try and turn your soil more, slightly more acidic, and then it just strengthens that plant and makes it easier for the roots to absorb the nutrients that it needs to grow successfully.
Yeah, I know somebody once many years ago gave us a tip and said throw in old batteries. I don't know if that's still good enough, but you know, put it in and it would give you the the acidity that you need in your soil.
That's definitely a new one to me, but I think it sounds like it would work wonders.
So, you know, you pick up along as you're going along. Well, somebody's wise and says, well, I've tried it, and this is what. Yeah. And they specifically spoke about hydrangeas. Said, you want to change your color from one to another? Don't stress. Just put in a couple of batteries. Wow, and it worked. So, well, those are things we could try.
And it's surprising these days, I think, because our soil, I want to say the pH of our soil is very, very important. And our soil in general is very important for good plant growth. And I think people sometimes forget that they buy the most beautiful plant and then they just go and plant it in the most terrible soil. Because a lot of our homes these days are not on the lush, we don't have that amazing topsoil that we used to have. You know, it's on sandy sites or the builders have put the building rubble back or we've got older gardens where the nutrients have been leached by the plants that we currently have in the garden. So it really is a good time now to just go and almost revamp your soil. Put in lots of compost if you have, whether it be homemade, even your bokashi if you've been making that. And then, as I say, some extra fertilizers just to rejuvenate your soil at this time of the year.
The other thing is, you know, somebody's querying about aloes. You know, whilst it's a wonderful plant to have in the garden, would it only be in reds, or do you have them in a number of other colors as well?
No, the aloes seem to come now. I mean, there's a beautiful bicolor, like a pink and white one. I think, and then there's the yellows, the oranges, the reds. There's multiple colors that you can get it in, but all those warm colors, you know, you don't get it in any dark, not the peaceful colors, none of the blues and the purples, but all the rich, warm colors for winter, which is what you're looking for in your garden. And you do get some paler ones that might be a very soft butter yellow. So there is quite a variety of different colors that you could look for. If you visit, the one that I was thinking of now, I've remembered its name, is called the ice cream, aloe ice cream. Oh. And that comes in a pink and a white color. It's beautiful, beautiful. So you can find different ones I keep mentioning how wonderful it is that they've been bred specifically for your garden. Because, you know, it always very get sad when we see people on the side of the road and they're selling these aloes and you're just not sure where they come from. Do they come from the fells? Have they gone and picked them off a mountain? Because aloes are so hardy that they can thrive in really any type of situation. And so we're really trying to encourage people to try and get their aloes from a reliable source because we don't know where the other aloes might have come from.
I'm talking about aloes, you know, they're multifunctional. Whilst, you know, it adds beauty to the color and aesthetics, it also adds you know, for medicinal use and, you know, other uses as well. Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not just the aloe vera or the bulbine that you could just break off, and if you have a mosquito bite or an itchy bite or, you know, an open wound when you're busy walking in the salt or in your garden, you know, if you're, when you're busy pruning your rose bushes in 2 months' time and some of them are more harsh on your hands than others, then you can always just break off a little piece of aloe and rub it over the wounds, and it would be remarkable how quickly it heals. So it's definitely got very nice medicinal properties.
I was reading an article yesterday about autumn, and one of the things that struck me, you know, they spoke about, you know, the bounty of harvest. We normally have, you know, this is a time when people will be harvesting lots of their fruit and vegetables. And then three sort of images came to mind, spoke about cinnamon, apple, and orange. Does that ring a bell?
Yum. That sounds delicious. Makes me think I should be having breakfast. I see a lot of the fruit trees in the nursery already have got tiny fruits on already. So specifically more your oranges and lemons, you know, the citrus is going to come into wonderful fruit within the next few months. And then apples, I'm actually just surprised at the wonderful range of different trees that you can put now. Fruit trees in a garden have become trendy again. You know, so you don't only, it used to be just indigenous trees or shade trees that you would be planting in your garden. Now you're trying to plant trees that are universal. And so fruit trees, and particularly nut trees, macadamia nuts and almonds, those are all becoming popular trees to have in your garden, because I think we're trying to become more sustainable and rather, you know, from, I think it's from farm to plate type of thing, is the work we're trying to encourage customers to do. And so if you can plant fruit trees in your garden, it would be wonderful.
Just before we go to, you know, wrap up, before we go for a short break, you know, about fruit trees, I had a query. Do they do well in pots?
I'm going to say your citrus would do really nicely in pots. I think you just have to remember that it needs to be a big pot, and as soon as you put it in a pot, you're going to have to feed it, because you're restricting the availability of nutrients that it could get itself. And then I'm thinking, you know, some of your apples and pears, those type of things, could also probably do very well in a pot, because they do very well as espalier, you know, so when you're putting them against a wall.
I was just going to tell you about the espalier, but let's carry on. Yes, that's fantastic.
So I think, you know, those would also do really nicely in a container that you could actually do espalier with. But I know, like, your more your nuts and those type of things, they actually need they have a bigger root system, and they need a lot more water. So those you would rather actually not have in a pot and put them into the ground, so there's easy access for them to get water and nutrients.
The final question is, the espalier, is it a difficult technique, or is it something that, you know, because you normally find it in Mediterranean countries where you find, you know, they've done all of these trees against walls and so forth. Not very trendy yet in South Africa, but there is a move. Sorry, carry on.
I interrupted you. I think there is a move towards it now, because a lot of people, they do want these fruit trees, and but they don't have the space to plant them. And so it is, I would say, slightly challenging, and you have to make sure you get young plants. So it's a patience game. And, you know, some of us aren't that patient that we want to wait and then twist the branches along the wire that we've put onto our walls. But, I mean, once you have it, it looks beautiful. And so I think you just have to remember to get a young plant so that the branches are still pliable as such, so that you can put them on. And then you would have to twist them as they new shoots or water shoots come through. Then you're going to twist them into your wire on your wall, and then wait, and then you would have fruit. So I think, yeah, it is definitely going to be some way that people are going to be growing fruit in the future, and we should be looking at that more and more.
Okay, we're going to go for a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue. Thanks.
Excellent. Okay.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to our garden program, Dare to be Different. My name is Ismail Buryaba. It's wonderful to have you. I beg your pardon, to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming medium 1548 Satellite Islam and DSTV 826. I'm sure this morning many of you are still curled up in bed, and yes, it's quite a, you know, So the temperatures have dropped dramatically, and many of you haven't ventured out into the garden. Some of you are still busy preparing breakfast, but wherever you are, and you'd like to join our conversation, number dialed this morning is 854-1548. Any queries, any questions? And we've got Carrie Goodwin, who's giving us some wonderful advice, and remember, she's always ready to share. So the number this morning, 854-1548. Thank you very much, Carrie. You know, we were talking about different things, and one of the things that comes to my mind is when you get into a colder period of time, our feathered friends. Now, there's a big debate about, do we feed them, don't we feed them? Do we leave food out for them, or should we let nature take its own course? What's your thinking on that?
I always like the idea of leaving food out for them. I think it's just a really important thing to do because we invaded their space and maybe we've taken away their food sources. And particularly at this time of the year, you know, a lot of the grasses have beautiful seeds on them. So they are getting their seed, the seed eaters are doing really well. And then as we were mentioning earlier, how a lot of the flowers are blooming for the nectar eaters. But we also have to look out for those insectivorous ones and maybe put out a little bit of a protein. So it's a suet or a peanut butter or a worm mix that you can just help the birds get warmer down feathers to help them cope with the winter as well. So I'm quite a big one for feeding the birds and just feeding for all the different varieties of birds within your garden.
Thank you for that one. And a query coming through with regards to citrus, and what recommended whilst we for lemons, is Eureka the best?
Yeah, Eureka is one of the best because it fruits all year round. So it's not really just a once-off fruiting. They fruit more often than maybe the Mary Eyes and some of the others.
You know, and what's become very trendy is limes. Do you have any recommendation for a lime?
We normally sell both the Tahiti lime and the Bears lime. And they both do very, very nicely. I hope I don't get the mother. The Bears lime is a smaller one with the green, which tends to be more for your drinking lime or maybe cooking. And then you get your Tahiti lime, which is slightly more yellow, more lemon-like. But you should be able to find both of them quite easily within garden centers, and they're both very tasty. And adding on that, sorry, just when you talk about limes, is also the Thai lime, which is what you buy for the leaves. So that you also find within the citrus section of the garden centers. And then it's to improve your, you know, add flavors to your curries. So then you don't really buy it for the fruit in, but you buy it for the leaves, which is also a lovely one.
So just the Thai lime, you could use it. It's not too dangerous to use in cooking, but it doesn't give you a lot of fruit. Is that right?
Yeah. I've hardly ever seen it fruit, actually. I mean, it must fruit, but we just maybe have. I'm picking too many leaves off to make for curry. So you must rather just use the leaves in your cooking.
Okay. And then grapefruit, and is there any particular cultivar?
So the one that we get particularly, but I think it's a good old-fashioned one, and there might be newer ones that are coming slowly, is the shagbark, which has the beautiful, nice yellow on the outside and then slightly pink, more fruit on the inside. So it's not as bitter as some of the grapefruits that you get as well.
And then, you know, the nacho, the clementines, which one would be the best? The clementine, is that the one?
You don't find clementines as easily as you find nachis.
Okay.
So you tend to find more nachis, and then your mandarins have become quite popular as well. And then what's making a comeback, which I think is quite nice, is the calamondin. You know, so they've got the tiny, more ornamental fruit. And yet I think people are looking for flavor, lots of very intense flavors when they're eating vegetables or fruit from their garden. And so those little calamondins definitely send my eyes whirling in my head when I take a bite of one of them. So I think that's quite nice that they're making a comeback.
Yeah, no, I know that people sort of make a pickle out of that, and they make lots of things out of the calamondins. And then what about the satsuma? You know, it's a new fruit. You know, every now and then I think the hybrids come through, and the satsuma. Yes. Satsuma would fit in between an orange and a nach, or where would that fit in?
Yeah, so that's between, as you correct, with an orange and a nachi. And you do find them also quite readily available in the garden centers these days.
And if, you know, would you be ready to buy it, bought it one season, 2 seasons later, would you be able to get the fruits, or would you be able to harvest almost immediately?
I think it depends on the trees, the size of the tree that you buy. But as soon as you start buying anything greater than a 10 litre, if it's a nice, well-fed tree, you probably actually would maybe be able to get things harvest immediate, well, within the season that you planted. But if you're buying smaller ones, you know, the 4 or 5 litre type of ones, then you would have to wait at least another year before you would be able to get any fruit.
Query coming through with regards to healing for winter. Have you any recommendations that we could put into our gardens and use, as well as both culinary and medicinal?
Well, I think, you know, and I don't really eat a lot of veggies, but all our range of veggies that we put in our gardens for winter are all healing. They're for stews and soups. So, you know, it becomes all your very healthy, your cabbages, your broccolis, leafy greens, they just love it. The spinaches, they all do really, really well in the winter, your Brussels sprouts. So I think those have wonderful healing properties, and they're very nutritious and help with all the toxins that might be in the environment. You know, they just cleanse our bodies. So you could definitely be growing your own there. And then I also think, you know, you have all your onions that come through as well, your celeries. So to be able to make really tasty stews and soups. So that's always, for me, is what you need for the winter. And then, of course, you have your citrus, which is going to help you with fight flu and that sort of thing. So I find our autumn and winter fruit and vegetables that we are planting are actually, the reason that we're planting them now is because they're meant to nourish our bodies and heal our souls in the winter. And so I think that's really quite important, and it's been planned that way.
And, you know, when you talk to people, I think there's a great move about, you know, eating what is, you know, available seasonally and also locally. I think so, you know, we're talking about two things. We're talking about, you know, the carbon footprint, you know, reducing that. And the other thing is, you know, nature's provided for us at that particular time, you know, the Almighty has provided that, you know, you get certain fruits at certain times, and it would help the body, you know, through the spirit of, you know, winter and so forth. Is that something happening all the time?
I think so. You know, what is important now is, or it's always a tough decision for me, is whether you start taking out all your summer fruit, which is just the harvest is there, and plant your winter, or you wait another month or so. And so if your tomatoes, they should be harvesting, you should be harvesting plenty. And, you know, you can take them and either freeze them whole or start using them in relishes and that type of thing. So you can start harvesting the summer fruit so that you can actually remove it to plant your winter ones. You know, your eggplants and those sort of things. I know ours in the garden center, they're not quite big enough yet. They would be like tiny little baby eggplants that you would find in the shop. So we just like, okay, we're going to leave them in for at least another 3 weeks so they can grow nice and big, and then we're only going to put in our cabbages. So it's that decision that you might be having to make now, is can you leave your summer harvest, which is actually doing wonderfully now, for a few more weeks, and then in the in-between spaces, you could start putting in some of your broccolis, maybe some carrots, if you have bare patches where you have managed to complete your summer harvest.
And, you know, when we're looking at all of these, you know, again, we're being spoiled for choice, because we now have lots of things that have come in from other countries which are now sort of part of our local scene. So we have lots of the Chinese herbs that have come in, veggies that have come in. That is, you know, part of the Oriental stuff. But then you have other, from other parts of the world, you know, fruits and vegetables we haven't seen. And they're coming in, and they're making a big statement. You find them in many gardens, garden centers and so forth, and even homes. But people not very sure about them. Have you found that happening?
Yeah, I think I know in Keith Kirsten Garden Center that we have, we've actually moved our edibles up to the front so that we can teach customers more about them and show them how easy it is to actually grow your own fruit and how rewarding it is to be able to taste it. So we have all the plants that are for sale at the front of the garden center, and then at the bottom of the garden center, our team each chose the different vegetables and fruits that they would like in the garden. I mean, they said to me the other day that they think we should put one of our, I think it's a pecan nut tree, because it had beautiful pecans on it. They said, we're not going to sell that one. That one we're going to plant in our garden so we can get to taste what pecan nuts are like. But, I mean, they have an array of lovely vegetables that they are growing for themselves. And then I see other people within the shopping center also coming to, you know, pick their spinaches, the onions that came through. The beetroot was an absolute hit. I mean, we could plant beetroot like it was going out of fashion, because they just loved it. They, you know, and so I think that's what the reward is of growing your own vegetables, is that you put in a little bit of effort, and it really isn't difficult as long as you give them good compost again. You know, they're not even very thirsty, most of them. They do need water, obviously, but you just, and then you have to use them. I think that's what sometimes, it's become so trendy to have vegetables and herbs in your garden, and then you forget to use it, and then you get disappointed that it's gone to seed or flower and hasn't done anything. And then it's actually, well, it's our fault for, and for me, the coriander especially. The coriander I don't seem to use fast enough. And so then it goes into flower, and then I'm like, oh dear, my plant has disappeared. Because as soon as your herbs go, or your veggies even, if they start going into flower, if they think their job is done, then they're producing seeds which will drop and produce new coriander, lettuce, whatever it might be. But if you break off those flowers and even use them maybe in your stir fries or something, or if you just break them off, then they're going to continue producing lots of leaf and lots of, you know, even I want to say like the basil. It will just keep producing for you until it's actually had enough, or it gets frosted when it gets to the winter time.
You know, we're going to be talking a little bit about bulbs, and then I want to go on to, you know, it was World Water Day, a day before yesterday. So let's
I almost forgot.
Because that one, you know, can tie in with what we talk about lawns. So let's quickly, you know, talk about bulbs. Now, many people are scared and don't want to put in bulbs, and then we have those people who find it very trendy, especially putting bulbs in. I never show in the home where you find the roots coming through in a beautiful, you know, glass bottle, and you have some of the hyacinths and so forth. There's something about those bulbs, the paper whites and so forth.
Yes. So it's generally only your paper whites and your hyacinths, both of which are available this year, which is so exciting because sometimes you don't get the hyacinths,
mm-hmm.
that you can plant into a vase with pebbles at the bottom, and then you just basically have to, the tiny bit of the bottom of the bulb has to be in water, but I'm talking maybe 1 millimeter, and that will encourage the root growth. And then you'll see these roots grow. And then with the hyacinth, I just think it's so amazing because they have the most beautiful fragrance. So it's like having cut flower fragrance, cut flowers in your home the whole of the winter. So definitely those are one of the ones that you would want. And the paper whites, you know, what some people do, not even in a vase, is they plant them into like a fishbowl. And then you just have this glorious, the white pebbles with the brown of the bulbs, and then these beautiful white flowering paper whites. And so it just looks so incredible. So I think those are definitely two that if people did want to put bulbs into their home, that's what you would use. And then when you go outside into your garden, you know, there's quite a lot of the indigenous bulbs. We spoke about the freesias earlier, which would be fragrant, which are wonderful to plant. And then you get your more exotic bulbs, but still very, very rewarding. And that's your anemones, your ranunculus, your daffodils, you know, later on. And then we're talking more for spring flowering, so you only plant these towards the end of May, would be your tulips and that type of thing.
Just a question coming through about the bulbs that you're talking, that you've got to make sure it doesn't get submerged fully. Would a toothpick be good enough where you put them into a toothpick, or, you know, just to anchor them so they don't submerge? Would that not damage the bulb in any way?
So if you were going to grow it, that it didn't actually have any pebbles or anything underneath it. So it's almost like when you plant an avocado.
No, I think it's in the water, but how to make sure it doesn't get submerged fully into water, I think that's the query.
Oh, okay. Actually, the toothpick would be a wonderful. I think you would just have to make sure that you don't put the toothpick in too deep. So I wouldn't put it maybe more than 3 millimeters, you know, because they're quite nice big bulbs that you're going to be planting with. So I wouldn't put it more than 2 to 3 millimeters into the bulb itself. But as most of the time, you're actually just resting it on a pebble base. And so it's not resting in any particular water as such. You would fill your vase up with pebbles and then just put probably 2 millimeters of water above the pebbles, pop the bulb onto the pebbles, and that's where your bulbs would sit.
Okay, so the idea is to make sure that, you know, it's not submerged into water. It just has,
right.
You know, the tips, the end tips into the water.
Yeah. No, you definitely don't want to put even, I would say, a third of the bulb into water would be way too much. It literally just has to touch the tip of the water so that you can encourage the roots to grow into the water. And you know, some people, what they do is they take a little piece of charcoal at the bottom of their vases, and they put that into it to keep the water clean, because that absorbs all the algae and bacteria that might be found in the water.
And do you have to change the water regularly? No.
Not really. I want to say, I don't think I've ever... If you change it once a month, it would be a lot, but sometimes I don't change my water at all. You know, because the bulbs, you do use it, so you are continually replenishing the water. And I think that little piece of charcoal does help. But no, I've never really had to change my water as such.
Well, let's go on. Thank you very much for that. Now, World Water Day, 25th, I think that was the date, and we're looking at ways to reduce, you know, our water usage, because we're in a water-scarce country, and one of the biggest guzzlers has been our lawns. Now, we've got to look at the way of putting in organic and inorganic alternatives. Now, before we talk, let's talk a little bit about water, and then we go back to that one. World Water Day, what does it mean for us as South Africans?
Well, I think, you know, what was very important was that because we've been through the drought, water was on the forefront of everybody's mind. And I think it was only probably 2 to 3 days before that it was actually gazetted that in Gauteng we could start using water again and we didn't have the water restrictions anymore. So I just think, and we have mentioned it on previous shows, that we mustn't go back to being the water guzzlers that we were. We still have to use water conservatively, because when you listen to the long-term forecast, we're always going to be a water-stressed country. So those wonderful practices that we were almost forced to initiate during the drought, we should still be practicing them. We shouldn't be going back to having full bars and maybe not recycling our water anymore. You know, it's still important to try and have rainwater tanks. Use your grey water where you can. And I think that would be one of the most important messages that would come away from World Water Day, is to maintain those really good habits that have been initiated during December, November, January type of thing.
And now, you know, whilst we say, you know, lawns are the biggest guzzlers of water, and is there a way that we can sort of reduce that and look at organic and inorganic alternatives? What would be the organic alternative to lawn?
So there's actually so many wonderful ground covers that you could put in that are much more water-wise than lawn. So you could use Diamondia, which is a little grey-leafed one that pops with yellow flowers. You know, what a lot of people are doing now is they're reducing their lawn and then they're creating gardens and then using pathways to where you would go and step on. So you don't have these expansive lawns anymore. But the other one is, you know, in your shady spots where lawn doesn't traditionally grow very well is your dichondra. Your wonder lawn does very nicely. My favorite, which we've used at some of the garden centers, is we've put mint down instead of lawn, because then it feels like a foot massage when we walk in barefoot into in the children's play area in the one garden center. So I think there's lots of wonderful, wonderful ground covers that you could use to still have low growing, very water wise, I want to say, where your lawn would traditionally be. But then you also have different lawns, because we are so ingrained to have kikuri as a lawn. And that is a water guzzler of note. But I mean, when it looks green, it looks beautiful. But now in the winter, it's not actually going to look as beautiful as we would like it to look. And so I think you need to start looking towards more your buffalo grasses as lawn. There's a beautiful princess grass, and they tend to be more water-wise and indigenous to our country. So they've got thinner blades, and they just perform better whether it's hot or dry. They don't need nearly as much water. And we have them at home, and they're actually still lovely to walk on. I can't believe that everybody doesn't plant them because they're indigenous. You know, when you have that epiphany and you think, why are people still, especially when you have large estates and and golf courses and things, and you think, why are they still planting kikuri when we've got our own wonderful indigenous grasses that we could be planting?
Well, I think this is what it is all about, you know, to make people aware and to educate them and so forth, because I think for far too long we've only been been exposed to only one type of lawn, and the LM lawn came through and some others.
Yes.
But now that we know that there are other alternatives, I think that's something that we can look at. Now, finally, you know, I was looking at an article, and I've got this article here. It says, the Lasagna method of planting bulbs. Have you heard that?
Which method of planting bulbs? Sorry.
The lasagna method. So, you know, lasagna, like making lasagna, you know, like, yes. You know, where you layer it. Have you heard of that one?
Yes. I remember Tanya Fisher wrote about it once in an article. She created this most beautiful pot where, at the, you know, she had, you plant your bulbs a little bit deeper, well, much deeper, say, than your seeds, and then she put annuals on top. And so for the whole of the autumn and the winter season, this pot changed its complete look every month, because at first you had the beautiful, say, pansies, and then popping out from the pansies became the daffodils a month later, and then popping out after that became something taller. And it was just like, wow, an ever-changing a pot that was so easy to do. So it really, I like, that's a new word I'm going to use, the lasagna way.
Well, you know, I've got something here. Somebody sent me something. They send the bottom layer. You put in the daffodils, alliums, diffions. Yeah. In the middle layer, you put in your tulips and hyacinths. And your top layer, you put your crocus, your axia, the freesias, the muscari. So you got all your bulbs.
Beautiful.
But it, I was just, you know, I'm just trying to picture how that would look. Because every time, you know, the whilst the bottom layer is the daffodils, so that will come out a little bit later. Then your middle layer, you've got your tulips and hyacinths. So as you know, these bulbs come into bloom, you'd have a different sort of look in that particular pot. Wouldn't that be right?
Yeah. So that's what it would be. It would just be changing as it is. So maybe the hyacinths will come out a little bit before the tulips. And then, as you said, the daffodils will come out last. And your Iphion and your Muscari will probably be one of the first ones to come out near the top. So it's going to change maybe from the blues and the whites, and then get a beautiful yellow, and then maybe get some pinks in it. So, oh, I think that's just a wonderful idea. That really just inspires me to go and get into the garden. And I think we might be planting something like that in our garden centers as well.
Yeah, well, I thought, what did, you know, when I looked at it, I said, lasagna, what's happening? Are they cooking with bulbs? And I said, no, let me read the article. And it wasn't cooking, but I thought it was such a fascinating idea. And I thought, you know, and people would be able to do that. And if you're creative, you can think of so many other things. I'm sure you could.
Absolutely.
And
I think, oh, yeah.
Maybe you should be creating one like that, and just once you have the job, just send us some of the photographs. I'm sure it'll be stunning.
Okay. We'll do that, because you really have inspired me. So we'll create one in the garden center this week, and then we'll send you photos of how it changes throughout the season.
Yeah, but thank you very much. I think that, and finally, we have just 2 or 3 minutes. What would be our takeaway from this, you know, now that we're getting into autumn and into winter, what do you think is the most important thing to be done?
Okay, so the most important thing to me would definitely to be going, adding compost or mulch or something to your soil to protect your plants for when it becomes winter. Because I really am, and I want to say selfishly, I'm hoping that it's going to be quite cold so we can get rid of all the bugs. Because I just think we are inundated with different insects that are chewing our gardens, and especially when you're trying to be organic and have very little, you know, add any toxins into your environment, the bugs are loving our plants at the moment. So definitely to try and feed your plants as best you can to prepare them for the winter, and then to go and have fun in your garden, because there's so much wonderful color that you could be planting. So I think there's no excuse for anybody to have a dull winter. They can have the most beautiful, colorful, warm, heartening gardens that would just, you know, when they come home from work, or even if it's a beautiful plant on their desk, that they could just be thinking, sure, I really, my garden is my well-being. It's bringing me back home. It's grounding me. It's just, and I think that's what you should be doing in the winter. It's not time to tuck inside just yet. Go and enjoy the garden.
That's so true. I beg your pardon. That's fantastic. You know, we can get inspired and so forth. But finally, you know, I've got a query coming through. Aphids. And I don't want to talk about that because I think we're running out of time. But just to say, we've had an infestation of aphids. Is that correct?
Yes. I was going to say, the only good thing about the aphids is I'm loving all the ladybirds that I find around. I have never seen so many ladybirds everywhere. And I know it's a true indication of the aphids populations that just seem to be multiplying like crazy. So that's why I'm hoping for a bit of a colder winter. But, you know, there's garlic works really well for aphids, canola oil, or you have the traditional pesticides, Lidwix insect spray or cypermethrin or Malasol. They all work fantastically for aphids.
You take care. Thank you very much, Kerry. It's been a wonderful talking to you. You know, I've enjoyed being talking to you this morning so much, and I must tell you that when I spoke about the cinnamon, apple, and orange, I said, wow, maybe it's time for us to get something, you know, and on the breakfast table, like you said, I think it adds so much warmth.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely going to head into the kitchen now.
You take care. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye. And that was Carrie Goodwin giving us some wonderful ideas and what we could be doing at this particular time of the year. Inshallah, when we talk again next week, we may have some more ideas with some wonderful guests. You take care. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.